Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was the time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day, call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like adultery. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number 9, love lies, feline, with a death wish. Be right, didn't help. No name on a guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
Last night, in the middle of the game, the Astros-Tigers game, I was trying to think, are we getting to recent droughts for other teams in the city, and are the Astros getting to the point where they should be included in the mix? That's now, well, it's now 3 games in a row without scoring a run. 4 out of 5 games not scoring a run. And, of course, you got the epic 0-for-27. The Rockets did score points while they're missing all those three-pointers, but the 0-for-27 sticks out. The Cougs, not the basketball team, the football team, they went 2 Big 12 games in a row, right, going scoreless. And I tuned in to watch them play TCU to see if they could get to 3, and then they beat TCU. So it was fun to watch them win, but I wasn't there for that. I was there to see if it would get to 3. This Astros thing, look, you had Scuba on the mound. So I can't say it's inexplicable that they didn't score last night. And, of course, we'll get into the Yiner play. But it's tough. It's a tough watch because outside of the Yiner out, but he really wasn't out, there was never ever a threat. Like, Correa got a single, got a board, and then Altuve immediately hit into a double play. Like, he was down 0-2, hit into a double play. I was trying to remember, and then I just started to look at it, bats and innings, and that was really the only Astros threat. It was a 2-out rally. Yiner gets on with the signal, and then Urias hits a double. It leads to the controversial call. But other than that, the Astros never threatened Scooble or the rest of that Tigers pitching staff. The only other time that they had a man in scoring position is in the 10th inning when they were gifted one, I believe. And even Yiner wasn't in scoring position. He was at first. It's just that the play led to him getting a shot to score, which he did, but it didn't. But they ruled differently. It was an inept performance, which has been the case more often than not over the last 5 days or so. They lose. Yiner was safe. But are we still upset? It's 10 a.m. I don't know if I can work myself up to be upset about the play anymore. I mean, I've had time to digest it. I went through it with John and Lance this morning. It would be really fake of me to pretend like now at 10:09, I'm still boiling mad about it. That might happen later. I'm sure some people are built differently, and they're still upset by it. You might hear it maybe starting at 12:05. I don't know. We'll see what Paul feels. We'll see what the Killer Bees feel. But I have moved past that play. I can no longer be perturbed by that play. Yes, they got screwed. But you know what? What the hell, Ort? What are we doing?
What the hell,
bases Ort? Loaded.
What the hell, dude?
Throw it in the strike zone and see what happens. Please.
Guys, get out in the home run derby, all right?
Yeah, like, have to at least make them swing the bat.
Yeah, make them swing.
The Yiner Diaz in the 4th inning should have been a run scored. Understood. All that, let's push that aside. You couldn't control the umpires in New York ruling the way they ruled. What you can control is once you put yourself in a spot that is bases loaded because you've lost command, you know, you were he wasn't competitive because the runner took second after, I guess you would say, indifference, whatever you want to call that, when they didn't challenge, they just let him run the second. Once you do that, you see, okay, you see you got a base open, so you're not going to be – you're not going to give the batter any pitches to hit because you do have the base open. Okay, now you've put yourself in a spot where you got to throw strikes. And even if it's a grand slam to win the game, I don't care. It's better than what we got. The anticlimactic, I'm just going to walk this guy in with no pitch that would even entice him to swing on the last two pitches is ridiculous. That I have a bigger problem with. I'm more upset about that than the Niner play, because that was in your control. You cannot go out that way. It's soft. I'm not calling Caleb Ort soft. I'm calling that particular sequence of pitching soft. You don't have it. You're not going to entice that guy to swing. Your pitches aren't what you want them to be. Put it in the strike zone. Let's see him put it in play. Give your guys a shot to go make a play. Instead, it's a walk. In fact, you know what? I have a problem with the Tigers celebrating the way they did too. Come on, you don't celebrate. You don't run over to the guy who walked, who's over there making sure he gets the first, so it's all legal. You don't run over there and celebrate and do the hey. No, not when you walk a guy in. Not when you score the winning run on a walk. You go, you know what?
Handshakes.
You do what Marshawn Lynch does to his linemen when he scored touchdowns. Just shake their hand.
Yeah,
shake his hand, and then you go back into the clubhouse, happy that you got the win, but celebrating it because Ort wouldn't be competitive in the last couple pitches is ridiculous.
Because you can't really celebrate the guy who scores from third on that, because that guy was only there because of the...
because of the rules of baseball.
So yeah. Like, that guy got out last inning.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, you have to mob somebody. But, yeah. Yeah. Congrats. You beat a team that hasn't scored in three games.
Yeah. Congratulations to you. Yeah, you guys couldn't get it done. It took you 10 innings to beat a team who can't score runs. Look, Hunter Brown was good. He had a little trouble early, but found his way out of it, and he was good. Scooble, yeah. Of course, good. That was one of those games where all the people who love baseball, like the general media, national media, who aren't covering the teams, they run to Twitter to type out, check what's happening in Detroit.
Yeah,
it's like
popcorn emoji.
Yeah, it's we got a real pitcher's duel. And they tweeted out, trying to get people to watch. Look, I don't know how many people tuned in. That's not how baseball works. People care about their teams locally.
Yeah,
I don't think they rush.
People don't do that where it's like, hey guys, Jags Titans is 3-3 at halftime.
Yeah.
Rush, it's a defensive battle.
It's not how it works. It's the witching hour is the witching hour for a reason.
Yeah, those guys
baseball score. Doesn't have the witching hour.
No,
Scooble and Brown cool, but. It feels like more than it's ever been. Baseball is a regional sport. I wouldn't rush to see Baltimore versus the Royals just because they're two pitchers having a great game. I don't care.
I mean, it's like to the point where if a guy, I mean, this is recent for the Astros. If a guy's throwing a no-hitter, like unless it is someone like a pitcher I know or like a star pitcher, but if it's like some random jabroni throwing a no-hitter, it's like, oh, all right, cool.
Sure.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like we've had a lot of no-name no-hitters. Yeah, this is another one. I don't need to rush to MLB TV and find the Diamondbacks game to watch this. You know what? I'm good.
Unnecessary. The clip will be out shortly. I can watch it there. I don't need to have
I've seen it.
Yeah. In fact, I've been around long enough to see that before.
I've seen the Astros not score runs for three games in a row now. Like that, only half of this is really that impressive.
The impressive part is the Astros and their ineptness. That is the actual takeaway, how inept they've become.
It is a lot like the 27 missed free throw or missed three-pointers. Because in there was a James Harden make that got taken away. Because of an offensive foul, and that is like the Yonder Diaz one, where it's like they did score a run there in the middle there. It got taken away.
And somehow, some way, they did score a run.
Yeah, it didn't count.
It got reviewed, and I believe, confirmed that the call on the field was right?
I pretty sure they said confirmed.
Yeah, I thought I heard that, which is nuts. Okay, you want to go look at stands. I don't like it. You're clearly wrong. Okay. You don't believe you have visual evidence, but you're going to throw it in my face that he was clearly right and is confirmed? All right.
Yeah, I don't know how you can say it's clear. Like, I if you want to say, like, we don't know exactly when the catcher's mitt hit Yiner and where his hand
and where
went.
It hit him. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, I don't agree with that, but I can at least, like, all right, that, whatever. But to say, like, confirm is ludicrous.
No, it's ridiculous. No matter what you feel about it, the Astros go down. They have a game that starts at noon.
They should make a dossier like Daryl Morey.
It'll fall on deaf
dossier.
It'll fall on deaf ears
with that play.
Just like the Daryl Morey dossier did. What did it do for the Rockets? Nothing's gonna change the fact that that call went against you, and you move on. So you have Hunter Brown with a great start,
yeah.
Leads to nothing. You do lose.
Momentum is next day's starter.
And next day's starter is Fromber.
Yeah, in like 2 hours.
Yeah, Fromber will pitch today. Fromber, a bit of a checkered 2 weeks for Fromber. We'll see if he can pitch well and he can get out of a post game without saying something unbaseball-like. We'll see.
That we talk about tomorrow? Yeah.
He's got two things he needs to do today.
Win?
Well, it's not up to him. The Astros have to score runs.
Put the Astros in position to win.
Pitch well.
I would say Hunter Brown put the Astros in position to win.
Certainly. So, Fromber, follow that up with a good performance. If you got to shut him out, apparently you do.
No promises.
But once that's over, and maybe you lose because your offense doesn't score any runs again, don't say, I can't control what happens at the plate. Don't do that.
I mean...
You're right, but don't say it. But don't say it. Enough.
That is like the Fromber Valdez thing. Like it was the last post game press conference thing where it's like, listen, dude, technically you're right.
You're correct.
The way you're going about it is throwing your teammates under the bus.
Yeah. No matter what happens, let's say Trammell overruns another ball, and instead of catching it like he did last night, he misses it.
Which, by the way.
We haven't gotten to the back-to-back moments
of like that.
A Sanchez.
I'd rather lose like that than Ort throwing things in the other batter's box.
Honestly, if the ball that Sanchez misplayed had rolled to the wall for an inside the park home run, I would have taken that over the Ort thing. Yeah. Right. Little League home run, fine, whatever. We're back at it again. At least that was funny. At least it was funny.
Yeah,
the Ort thing was just disappointing.
Yeah, it was just like that's the perfect word for it because you're just sitting there. You're like, "Come on, dude! Like, just
throw it into the zone.
Let's get this guy. Like, don't even. I'm not even saying you have to like get him to swing and miss. Just get him to swing. Maybe it's a ground out. Like, just
a pop up, whatever.
Get him to
deep fly ball to center. As long as the play is made, I don't care. Going out the way they went out last night because Ort wouldn't throw a strike or even a ball near the zone.
Yeah, that
sucks. Like, okay.
If he's getting squeezed, again, not great. Still stinks. But it's like,
but I don't need the last two pitches for the batter to spit on him and go, you know, what are you talking about? I'm not swinging at that. That's not even close. Yeah. I'm walking the first and watch my teammates mob me for keeping the bat on the shoulder.
For not swinging.
So there it is. The Astros go down. The Sanchez-Trammell stuff was entertaining. Trammell was okay. If you missed it, Sanchez misplayed a ball that led to the Tigers having a run in scoring position. Just a badly misplayed ball. You could tell he was in trouble pretty much immediately.
Yeah. Classic, like, Utto.
Yeah, exactly. Utto. He wasn't smiling then. He does a lot of smiling no matter what the situation is. Not smiling at that point. And then Trammell comes in. Look, he's running hard to get to it, but it looked like he had it. It looked like that was going to be a routine play to end the inning. Instead, he overruns it and has to leap backwards. He lands flat on his back, has the air knocked out of him, and then jogs off. He did jog off. You know, it's one of those things like, I'm fine. I'm good. I'm going to jog off.
Yeah.
You may be hurting, but I'm just going to jog off.
Yeah. And it's,
because you didn't even, it's not like you crashed. Yeah. You didn't crash into the wall. Like, if you crash into the wall and make the play, you can walk off slowly and be like, you know what? I made the play. But I did crash into the wall. When you overrun a baseball, leap backwards and make the play, we're barely acknowledging what a tough play it was because you brought that on yourself.
Yeah, that's a classic.
You need to jog off the field and go, you know what? Shaking that off, I'm fine. And that's what he did.
Yeah. 99% catch probability.
Yeah, until you turned it into a real problem. Yeah. But at least he made the play. Sanchez didn't make the play. No matter what, the bats aren't doing anything. And they go down. They got Fromber today. We'll see if he can stop what has been. Well, as I said, it's not the pitching. They've had their bad moments, certainly 10-0, 7-0.
It's been the pitching at some points. It's been the hitting the entire time.
Yeah, the pitching has not been good. Mostly Dubin has turned some competitive games into non-competitive games. But if you're not going to score runs, it doesn't matter what your pitching does.
Yeah.
And that was what we saw last night, despite the bad call with Yainer Diaz. So they got a chance to not get swept. They got a four-game series against Baltimore. You'll see Alexander, which is great, actually. Lance McCullers will pitch as well. We'll see. And then Arrigetti is in that mix as well. You won't see Fromber or Hunter Brown. So it'll be who's the other guy? I just saw the rotation put up. McCullers, Arrigetti, Alexander,
Javier, Arrigetti. Javier.
So Javier.
Those are the rehab boys and Jason Alexander.
It's very true. And we'll likely, if the trend continues, get the best start from Jason Alexander.
Yeah, that's the horse there in the middle.
He can actually get
save our bullpen tonight, all right?
He actually can get you six at this point. He's the only lock out of those four to get it done at this point. All right.
Yeah. Christian Javier, take an Imodium or something before you go out there.
I'm still only counting on five, even if he doesn't have the bubble guts. I'm still only counting on five. All right, we'll go to break with that. If you want to join the show, as always, we welcome you. That number is 713-780-3776. We'll give you some Texan news because they got a couple players back, but it has not changed the outlook for the offensive line as far as who's starting. So we'll talk about that. We'll hear from Nick Cayley about what he wants from his unit as a whole. And also, a guy who has not participated in much this camp is Damian Pierce. So we'll hear from Nick Cayley on, at this point, his backup running back, we think. We'll see if the status of Damian Pierce changes if he doesn't take a snap in a preseason game and if he's available even for the joint practices that they're going to have with the Lions. All right, we'll go to break. We'll be back.
Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Kane is in the building.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
So we'll get to some Texan sound. Yordan was playing baseball yesterday. So we'll do that first. He was with the Hooks, Corpus Christi, getting some at-bats in. Had a couple hits and no setbacks as far as we can tell. I mean, it hasn't been 24 hours since he went out there. We'll see if he's back out there for another outing. But he went 2-for-4, had a double in that rehab assignment. And he said he felt really good. It's been one heck of a year dealing with this injury. But he's very thankful to God and is getting to the point where he can hit the baseball. But I'm getting to the point where I'm at, especially getting to hit the baseball and go up to bat. So he's thankful for all that. So Yordan's getting closer. Feels good. That's good news. Because if any team in baseball needs one of the better hitters in baseball, it's the Astros. They're desperate for any type of juice. Yordan, when he's Yordan, can be that. Hopefully he's long past his early season struggles and the injury, and he's back with the Astros before they wrap up their series against Baltimore, which I think is part of the plan, that he'll be with them in Baltimore. So that's good news. But it's one of very few good things going on with the team right now, particularly with guys who have a bat on their shoulder. All right, we'll get to Nick Cayley. Nick Cayley spoke about his team. Now, every coach you've ever heard talk about his team, he wants them to be physical. I don't think I've ever heard a coach say, you know what, I prefer finesse. It's just not something you say. So Nick Cayley's words aren't a surprise, but here's him on his approach to physicality for his side of the ball.
I mean, I think, look, I don't believe in being anything other than the most physical team we can possibly be. I think it allows you to control the line of scrimmage. It carves out, actually takes a 2 or 3 yard gain in the run game to a 4, 5, or 6 yard gain. It wears on people in the fourth quarter, and it's a matter of mental and physical conditioning for us just to continue to push through that. But yeah, I believe in a physical football team, and I think our guys have answered the bell, and they're working to be the most physical version of themselves every single day.
So he wants physicality. He thinks physicality will lead to his team scratching out yards and also beating up on an opposing defense and hopefully, you know, wearing them down, which I wouldn't be surprised if this is how the Texans go about their business on offense. C.J. Stroud, yes, we want him to have a good year. Nico Collins, one of the best receivers in football. Understood. But from the talking points, from what players have said about the offense to how they have constructed their offensive line, where they have chosen maybe more physicality over skill and a mindset, maybe more will over skill. I could see this is a unit where they lean into, you know, three things can happen when you pass, and two of them are bad. I feel like this could be an offense that doesn't take many risks, doesn't ask their line to hold up. And you know what? If we got to punt the football, run on 3rd and 9 to punt the football so our defense can get back out there and get us advantageous field position, I can see it. They may lean hard into defense, particularly early on. And if they can't run the football effectively, I don't know that they're going to be asking a rookie left tackle, because it appears Aron Terrasseri is going to be your starting left tackle. Cam Robinson is back, but he was with second team the last couple of practices. Of course, you're going to have, it looks like Titus Howard. If they go by this, Titus Howard's back at right tackle, and you've got Tomlinson, and I can't imagine, would it be Ingram? Maybe.
A
guy who was not good last year.
Yeah, well, it's two guys.
With Minnesota. Well, Lakin Tomlinson wasn't good either. But if Ursary is going to be the guy at left tackle and Blake Fisher can't play right tackle because he's just not good, Titus Howard is going to slide back in the right tackle despite what the plans were, and you're going to have, let's just say, two guys who were subpar last year and then a center who was a guy you picked up off the street last year and Jake Andrews. So this is what I'm talking about, will over skill for these guys.
Yeah.
The attitude, the teaching of Cole Popovich is something that I believe they want this line to be league average. I think that would be a success if they get the team to be league average.
They're league average, yes.
And league average offensive lines aren't generally lines that get you into the contender status unless your quarterback is like superhuman. And while CJ is on pace to be a good quarterback, I don't know that in year three we're going to see a superhuman performance from him. That's kind of reserved for, well, the best guys in the league who can make up for subpar offensive line play. But generally speaking, those guys have pretty good offensive lines. Pat Mahomes, last year, particularly against the Eagles, we saw that they had issues and they go out and go get Josh Simmons. And they've done this in the past. When the Bucs took them apart in Super Bowl, they went and reinforced their offensive line. So even the best guys in the league, their teams know.
Yeah.
They go get them a good offensive line. The Texans have decided they may not be good on paper, but maybe as a collective unit.
Their good work counts.
In their gut?
In their heart.
Oh, in their heart.
The one thing, you know, all these PFF grades and Lance obsessing over arm length. You know what those numbers don't account for? The size of your heart. How much dog you have in you. We're betting on dogs. 5 dogs across the offensive line. Air Bud.
I don't want retrievers. That's not the dog I'm looking for.
Yeah, they're canonically, they're golden receivers.
Can I get some Cujos?
Yeah.
I think they
full mastiff.
Can I get one of
on each end?
Yeah, Australian sheepdogs. Those dogs,
Rottweilers.
What are those dogs that wear like spike collars around their neck because they're protecting
those, like,
the sheep
and Russian
they
ones?
Yeah, and they got to keep the wolves off them, so they wear these spike collars so the wolves don't get at their necks. I need those type of dogs.
Yeah, and a Saint Bernard as my signal collar in the middle. Making the checks.
I don't know. I don't.
Making the checks.
St. Bernard seemed kind of dopey. I don't want a St. Bernard as my signal caller.
Beethoven put the PR back for Beethoven, for dogs.
I need a dog that's supposed to be intelligent.
Okay.
I don't need a St. Bernard.
But they also have to be big, though. That's
not at quarterback.
No. I said at center.
Oh, at center. Centers are usually the smallest guys on the unit.
Yeah, but
on
they're
the
still
unit.
Big.
But still, I don't need a dumb center. Huh. Find me a smart dog who's of good size, and then we'll have our unit. You can start to tell people what type of dog do you want as a left tackle. Doesn't matter. Just give me a pit bull. Doesn't matter. So yeah. When Sean's Googling,
these aren't large enough
to find a large dog that's considered smart. Once he figures that out, we'll come back with who we want Jake Andrews to be in dog form, I guess. But before we do that, let's hear about a guy who might be running behind that unit in the final preseason game. I'm sure he'll get snaps in the joint practice with the Lions. Here's Nick Caley on Dameon Pierce.
Yeah, I would say this. Dameon's played a good amount of football. He's a physical, violent runner. You get to see him out here. It's not like this is an unknown commodity. So whatever we feel is best for the reps, that'll be it. But, you know, I've watched Dameon. I've had an appreciation for him for a while. And, you know, I think he wants to go out there and just be at his best every single day. And I'm excited to get him back out here with us.
Yeah, he's played a lot of football, but not with you as the OC and not behind this offs line. And he's a guy who has an opportunity. We talked about it before with Joe Mixon's status up in the air and Nick Chubb, despite looking good on Saturday against the Panthers, he's a guy I don't think they planned on leaning on to be the guy who carries the bulk of the load for them. I don't think Nick Chubb is a 20-plus carry guy anymore. So even if Joe Mixon is on the mend and is going to be back, but not back for week one and maybe beyond, I like to see Dameon Pierce run the football a little bit in the preseason. Just to see. Just for my own well-being. Just for my own state of mind. Because at this point, you're looking at Nick Chubb and Dare if Saturday is any indication. And Dare's fine. Dare's third down back. He knows what he's doing. He'll pick up a free rusher on a blitz. That's what he's there for. But as far as a consistent ball carrier, you're going to need to find another guy beyond Nick Chubb, particularly if Joe Mixon can't go. All right, so Texans have joint practice with the Lions on Thursday. They're getting one more practice in among themselves before that. So we'll get to find out who can win another practice, because apparently winning joint practices has become a thing this offseason.
Yeah.
In fact, there's an Eagles reporter who has kept track of the Eagles and their joint practice wins over the last three to four years or so.
The Sirianni era.
Yes. He had a little graphic. I think the Eagles are like 11-3 in joint practices over the last 4 or 5 years. Okay, man. I think at this point, when you're the Eagles, you don't have to keep track of that. When you're an Eagles reporter, you don't really have to keep track of joint practices because your team plays in Super Bowls. That particular stat you're keeping is for the Bears. The Bears beat reporter should keep track because there's not a lot of success that the Bears have taken part in. Not a lot there. That's why all the regime changes. The Eagles, now one Super Bowl win came before Sirianni, but even with him, you got a Super Bowl loss.
Yeah.
And another Super Bowl win. It's okay. It's okay to not put a lot of emphasis on what they look like in the middle of August.
They're winning. That's all that matters. They're winning joint practice, where score is famously kept.
No, it isn't. It's not kept. That's the point. It's not kept at all.
How do you even do that?
I guess if you score touchdowns and the other team doesn't, you force a couple turnovers and you don't turn it all ball over.
But Nick Sirianni could really goose that by being like, we want to work on red zone offense the entire time. And we'll just, every time we complete a pass, it's a touchdown, basically.
Well, that's how it's set up. Like, they have red zone periods and then they'll have 11-11. But there's no no full drives. It's not like, hey, we're going to start at the 25.
No,
for the most part,
those are called preseason games.
Yeah, they don't start at the 25 and then drive for 75 yards because they got to get more plays in.
Yeah, they want to maximize the amount of plays they can run. But, yeah. Would you like a bloodhound as your center?
Because he sniffs out problems?
Exactly.
Not bad. Not bad. Either way, the Texans, we want We won a lot of Texans accounts this season to do that X-ray of a human body and have a dog in it, and then attach one of the linemen's names to it.
Oh, and when the All 22 comes out the next day, like the play of like watch 57 here after the whistle, and it's like, oh, he's being nasty after the whistle too.
57.
I don't know.
He's gonna be flat on his back. That's Blake Fisher's number.
Oh, really? I just
pick 69 or
a random number.
79. Pick Ingram. Ed Ingram's number or Ursary's number. Blake Fisher, I hope I don't see him in the all 22 in a regular season game. That's bad news.
Well, because they're up 25 and they're resting their starter.
Then that's bad news for Davis Mills. If they drop back the pass.
But look at, oh, okay, how about this? Look at 57 picking up Stroud after giving up a sack.
I don't want that. I don't want that.
Step in the right direction.
Yes, because famously, the offensive line did not do a lot of picking up for Stroud. Once they let guys get by him and knock him to the ground. You're right. It's a step
too cool, too cool for that. Can't put creases in your Jordans, your Jordan cleats.
He'll play in the Jordans, but he won't bend down because it'll put a crease in them.
You need to get the pick off.
Like, your offensive line thinks a lot of themselves when they're pretty much dressed like wide receivers on the field and off, actually.
And walking into the stadium.
To be honest with you, dressed like wide receivers on and off the field. Doesn't matter anymore. We got blue collar guys, at least. That appears to be the goal. We'll see how they play as a unit in week one against the Rams. All right, we'll go to break with that. We got some college football stuff to talk about. There is a team in the ACC, not my favorite team, don't worry about it. It won't be Miami-centric, but there's a team in the ACC who has three of the top 100 players in football, according to ESPN. I think their quarterback's ranked a little high, so we'll talk about that on the show today. We'll see where some of the guys we recognize are. Of course, some Texas players are there. We'll see if there's a Coug there or an Aggie. So we'll get into that. We've got more NFL stuff to discuss because the fallout of Anthony Richardson no longer being the starting quarterback for the Colts remains. And there's a funny clip when Quentin Nelson went on a podcast about who he wanted to be the quarterback. Let's just say the Colts didn't follow his lead. With his want. So we'll get into that. If you want to join us, the number is 713-780-3776. We will be back.
ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
So it's just one man's view. Sticking with the Texans here before we move to something else. DJ Bieniemy, who made frequent appearances on this station last season, when he's watching the Texans receivers out there, of course, Nico Collins and Christian Kirk are your top two guys. And then he says, right now, Xavier Hutchinson is the next guy up. The assumption was that Higgins would be your other outside receiver, whether you want to consider Kirk the two, because maybe CJ will target him more in the slot. That's whatever. Decide whatever, one, two, or three as far as the top three guys. But I did not suspect or expect that Hutchinson might be the guy who gets more of the early snaps. Of course, as I said, just one guy and what he's seeing at practice, but they do like him. He has been around, he stuck around through multiple. Did he begin with D'Amico? How long has Hutchinson been here? I feel like he's been here longer than that. But either way.
Yeah, either 23 or 22.
They like him. He's
stepped up when there's injuries.
Yeah, he fits as a bigger receiver. Yeah. He can play on the outside. We just thought you draft Higgins in the second round, give him all the guaranteed money, which started the whole delay for other teams to get their second rounders in. The assumption was Higgins would just be your two. But right now, at least according to DJ Bieniemy, he sees Hutchinson as the next guy up after Kirk and Nico. We saw Higgins make a really good play. He made a good play on the ball, and they also had a good route in the game against the Panthers. It's probably his one highlight from actual game footage. Of course, he's made plays in practice that people put out there, but
yeah,
you see the skill there. But you wouldn't be surprised if the new offense leans into an older player to work the, before they work the rookie in fully.
Yeah, that's why I'm not like, A, he's a second round pick. No, he was the 34th pick or whatever, 35th pick. So
it's very high.
Yeah, he's almost a first rounder.
Yeah.
But it's not the most shocking thing in the world that they were like, hey, you know what? Let's actually play the guy who fits the profile of what we want, who's just been here longer, at least to start the season. That's the other thing I think people – we talked about a little bit with the Anthony Richardson stuff yesterday about the by the time the Colts actually play the Texans, like who knows who's actually going to be taking taking snaps at quarterback for them. The NFL season, like you have your week one starters and then the season happens and either guys get hurt or guys don't play well or guys lower on the depth chart play really well and flashes and things get mixed. I'm just like not that, I don't know. I'm just not, I just don't sweat the like week one starting lineup of like, oh my God, here we go. Like it's just. We're just going to have to figure this out over 4 months, and we'll end up where we end up. And for the Texans, in my eyes, it's like, unless things go horribly wrong, you're probably just going to win the division anyway. Like, that really, no matter what happens.
Yeah, I think this entire year will be proof of concept about how they want to do things, particularly offensively. The defense we expect to be great.
Yeah.
They're the solid unit. This entire, let's say, 17 games will be about where they are when the playoffs come around. Is that offensive line unit one that's ready to protect your quarterback and run the football against a contender?
Yeah.
Do they top out as another wild card team, or is there another step to take? And because of the division, as you said, this is one of these things where you can
just win 10 games.
You can get to 10, hopefully more, and put yourself in a spot where you're actually a team to be feared at least a little bit when it comes to a potential deep run in the playoffs. And you know, if Higgins isn't ready to go right out of the gate, it's not a giant deal. You have your number one, and you have a veteran number two.
That makes it way easier.
Yeah.
Is that we're talking about?
We're not desperate for Higgins to be really
start
good.
On the opposite side of Nico Collins, it's like, well, I think having Nico Collins is a good start. Like that's really what we should be focused on.
Yeah, I was listening.
It's like the Mechie thing of like, oh my God, can you believe Mechie got cut? It's like,
yes, I can.
Yeah, not that crazy.
I can believe he got traded. They did draft two receivers.
It's also the seventh receiver on the team. It's more, technically, it matters more who is going to be like the Hutchinson or Higgins. That actually matters more than Mechie or Jared Wayne,
who was released earlier.
Yeah.
Best known for the Tank Dell injury, unfortunately, for Jared Wayne. See if his career takes a different trajectory someplace else. But you got your guys. You traded for Kirk. You have Nico. That's good enough. And we'll see if another option emerges. I was listening to a podcast, and they talked about this, where the young quarterbacks in football, the good ones, generally have a guy and then a real number two.
Yeah.
You just start to go around. Of course, the top of that is Higgins and Chase. You can look to certainly Minnesota when Addison is available. They'll have Jefferson and Addison. Jane Daniels was the outlier.
Yeah. Higgins and Hill and Waddle.
Yeah, for Tua, and he got going. Jaden Daniels was the outlier. He had McLaurin and Zacchaeus, I guess.
Zacchaeus, Dyneemi Brown,
They didn't really have a number two, and it worked out well for them. And the point the podcast made is these teams, they put real options, and not just a second around their young quarterback until they're ready to be better where it doesn't matter. It was like Patrick Mahomes had Kelsey and Hill, and then eventually when Patrick Mahomes showed himself to be who he was, they can discard Hill.
Allen had Diggs.
He
really got started like as a real guy when Diggs showed up. And yeah, you know, the Gabe Davises, kind of like,
he was
good, fine. Number two.
Yeah,
like a fine number two.
Yeah, he was a guy who was a deep ball threat, all this stuff. Yeah. So I understand the want to have a solid two, but let's just insert Kirk into that role.
Yeah.
And hopefully when I would say Kirk is probably a one-year guy if things work out with their other guys, because Noel is there and Higgins is there. If those two guys show themselves to be worthy of where they're drafted, then you have cheaper options for your two and three pass catchers. You say, appreciate it, Christian. Yep. Thanks for the year.
Thanks for the memories.
And then you move on because you've invested in that position.
We'll send you the Super Bowl ring in the mail.
It is funny that that's probably how he'll get it if they win one. It'll come in the mail. Because don't they usually bring the guys up there and hand it to them?
Baseball and basketball, but that's because every team like shows up at some point, or like you play every team once.
Yeah, you'll eventually be able to give the guy his ring.
In football, it's like you don't do that. Like there's a 50-50 chance.
And there's a lot of guys ever again. Like generally, championship teams in those sports.
Yeah, there's also 100.
The turnover isn't the same. Yeah. So yeah, if you are right and the Texans do win a Super Bowl, I would say a quarter of the guys get them in the mail.
Christian Kirk is of the level where like he'll be on another NFL team, but
yeah, but you can't guarantee he'll be making a trip.
Oh, they're not going to have the Giants this year.
They're not going to have Christian Kirk Day and have a ring waiting for him. So no, he's not of that level. So yes, he probably will get his ring in the mail if it comes to that. Hopefully, it does.
I hope so. I hope that's the problem we have, is that they're not properly honoring Christian Kirk for the game-winning touchdown catch.
Who's the person who has to send Kirk his tracking information for his ring? Do they leave that up to an intern, or does someone in PR make sure Christian Kirk gets his tracking information from FedEx as he awaits his ring from the Texans?
After he made the Santonio Holmes catch 2.0 to win the Super Bowl.
CJ ain't throwing a Christian Kirk to win the Super Bowl. That ain't happening. If it happens, it's more likely like some Will Anderson strip
Nico
sack.
Because Nico Collins was quadruple teamed.
Nah, some Will Anderson strip sack to close it out. That's
Stingley interception.
That's where I'm going with
Stingley,
it.
Stingley Tracy Porter style interception.
If we're talking about it, that's how it's going to go. All right, we'll go to break with that. We can all dream, right, about a Texans Super Bowl and how it ends?
Right now, just close your eyes and think about
and
how
imagine
the Texans
how
would
the clinching play. Do you believe in any way that Christian Kirk is going to play a part in the deciding play? Maybe he sets a screen. Maybe he blocks on a bubble screen or something.
Yeah, downfield block that springs Nico Collins for the yards after catch.
I'm trying to think of all the big moments in Super Bowl history. I mean, we had John Taylor catching the touchdown. We've had Plexico Burress catching a touchdown. Does Christian Kirk live up to those two? Probably not. I'm going to go with Nico.
Cooper Kupp.
Star receiver. Yeah, it's generally the star.
Every play on the drive.
Taylor was a two on that team because of Rice, but he was still a star receiver. I don't know if a slot receiver is going to get it done. Although, didn't Mecole Hardman catch the winning touchdown? Was that him?
Hardman caught one, I think. Didn't Tony catch another one?
He caught a touchdown, but it wasn't the winning touchdown.
Okay.
In overtime against
Sky Moore?
In overtime against the 49ers.
Against the Niners, that was
Mecole Hardman.
Tony
had a big punt return. He caught a touchdown.
Yeah.
But
against
it was
the Eagles. Was it Sky Moore? It was like another MVS, like where you're just like, sure, I guess.
Yeah, but I think the deciding points was a field goal or something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was
a defensive holding or pass interference.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So if Mecole Hardman can do it, I guess Christian Kirk can.
Kirk.
I take back all I said.
Draws a key defensive holding play to set up the Kyeemy Fairburn.
Oh, I get it. But if Mecole Hardman can win a Super Bowl,
yeah,
then Christian Kirk can win a Super Bowl.
I agree with that. The logic checks out to me.
Yeah. It's not the type of legendary player doing it.
No,
but
that's why we talked about famous Super Bowl plays for like 5 minutes before thinking of the one that happened 2 years ago.
Just more proof that the Chiefs are frauds, that Mecole Hardman won them a Super Bowl. All right, we'll go to break with that. I said that like 4 minutes ago, but now we're going to break. We'll get to hour two when we come back.
ESPN 97.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.